Boom, we're on. Today's guest, we've got bare knuckle world champion Rico Franco.
Nice to meet you, mate. Yeah, it's good to be on, mate. Really good.
Good to have you on.
Definitely.
Watched a couple of your fights.
Yeah.
Next level stuff, that bare knuckle stuff. But you 6-0?
Yeah, 6-0 BKB, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's it is a scary sport, though, when you see people just absolutely tearing it up. For you, your story is you've won world title, but just a few months after it, you had a life-threatening disease which could have basically killed you.
Yeah.
Which is mad to think that you're in a ring fighting basically for your life, and then outside that you're also fighting for your life, which we'll touch on. First of all, how are you?
I'm doing really well, mate. Best I've ever felt in all my life, I think. Definitely.
You're looking great.
Yeah, thank you.
Good, mate. I always go back to the start for my guests, where you grew up and how it all began.
Yeah, so I grew up in hometown Gainsborough. Just a normal kid. I was always active. I used to like have a bit of a temper. I liked to fight all the time at school, and I was always active playing. I was swimming when I was young, and I was playing a lot of football as well, but I didn't start my boxing training until end of the years at school, probably maybe 15, 16, started doing a bit of boxing. And then, I got into boxing. Then it was just travelling a long time. Like, although I didn't have a car or anything, so I fell into MMA. There was an MMA gym in my hometown, and that was it. I just fell in love with MMA. I just liked training every day, and that's how I really got into it, like, about 13 years ago.
Did you have a big family?
Not really, no. I've never had... My dad's from Portugal, so basically I'm half Portuguese, so half the family's that side. And we haven't really got... I don't have anything to do with my family this side, really. It's just me and my brother. My mum passed away 6.5 years ago now, so...
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it's just mainly me and my brother. And my dad's still in Gainsbury, just out and about all the time, going back to Portugal and stuff, so... it's just I like to keep it small anyway. Best way.
Yeah, it's not too much drama then.
Yeah, exactly. Less drama, less hassle.
What were you like at school, Rico?
Thick. that's why I fight bare knuckle now. I was always polite and respectful, but I was just always mischievous, always getting into trouble, fighting and getting excluded and stuff like that. But I was never really. I wasn't a horrible kid. I was always just like, always a bit like, just I had to do something, just like a bit mad. I was always like just adventurous, active, playing football, sports, and just had a bit of a temper on me. I don't know whether that's from my dad's Portuguese side, but yeah, it's, I was always getting into trouble, to be fair, and I didn't really get great grades. To be fair, I was going to go in the army at first. That's what I wanted to do, and I couldn't get in because I had bad eczema at the time, bad skin, and I was on steroid creams, and they wouldn't let you in because of that. So, like, everything happens for a reason. That's why I didn't go in. I'm glad I didn't now.
Did you have a close relationship with your dad in your younger years?
In younger years, it was, we had a steady relationship. Obviously, I was really, my brother was really close to my brother, like, proper close. We just stuck by each other throughout everything, really, just overcome everything. So, but yeah, it's been pretty mad.
So you've done boxing, MMA, bare knuckle. So when you started boxing, what age did you go down to the MMA route?
Probably about 16. I think I had my first fight about 10 years ago when I first turned 18. So yeah, about 10 years ago, that was at Liverpool. I was training for a good 2 years before, 2 or 3 years. I wanted to get a bit of experience first, but that was kind of a last minute fight. I jumped on it in a week's notice, and I was pretty ready, but I didn't really know what to expect, and I was like crapping it. I was nervous, honestly. I'll never forget that first fight because I was against some like jiu-jitsu gold medalist, and I was just nervous. I didn't know what to expect, and I just didn't know how to control them nerves. But UFC coach in his corner, and I was just crapping it. But then I got through 3 rounds and he beat me on decision, but I was so fuming. Like, I'd hate losing. But it was an amazing experience. I lost my first 2 amateur fights, actually. And obviously that could break a lot of people. And, you know, they'll probably just give up. But it kind of like motivated me more to get that win. And that third fight when I won, it was the best feeling ever. It was amazing. And obviously, I hate losing. I'm competitive, so it just made it better. To be fair,
how's the training then?
It was hard because I wasn't struggling with training. I was training every day, but I was still at school. And when I left school, I was just trying to get jobs. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I didn't really have a plan in place. I was just going with the flow. I was working part-time at Morrison's. I was at college, and I was doing bits and bobs, hustling on side.
What were you doing at college?
I was doing bricklaying. So I'm a brickie by trade. I did about 2 years, 3 years at college, and then I just kind of went out of it. I didn't do out from it. It was just got a bit of a trade just to see what happened, and I didn't really get out from it now. So I've probably forgot how to do it now.
Mm-hmm. When did you realise, okay, I'm going to stick with MMA? What age were you?
Yeah, after a few fights, after I got that first win, I thought, I'm going to stick with this. I'm just going to like see how far I can go. And it was just a bit of a hobby, but then I kind of got obsessed with it. And I was just every day I was just waking up thinking, right, I'm off training later. I was obviously working through the day then. I had a full-time job for so many years. And then I've changed jobs like 3 times, but I was always just like focused on fighting. And then it just clicked one day. I just wanted to do fighting. And that was it, really. Even though I was training working full-time, I was training every day, but I was just like, I want to train full-time. Like, that is my dream, to like train full-time, not have to work, and like somehow get an income. So like going through that, you'll have to like kind of hustle on the side, mm-hmm. get a few jobs and, you know, bits and bobs, get a bit of income, and like try and blag some sponsors. So sponsorships are massive for MMA fighters because there's no money in it. There's no money in even pro MMA. There's not much money. But then when I had my first pro fight, I had to think, right, I need to try and train full time. So I fucked the job off. And I went part-time, and then I slowly did that way. So it's been hard, like, there's no money in it.
Yeah. So what do you do it for, just the love of fighting? What enjoyment do you get out of fighting, Rico? Do you enjoy getting hit in that?
Yeah, I think it's just the training, like the buzz you get from just training, like even grappling. Like you get just that feeling when you've finished the trailing, you've let off all them endorphins, and you just feel amazing. And obviously while I'm sparring, I don't know what it is like getting punched, but you just get a good buzz when you... People might think you're mad, but every fighter knows what I mean. And like when you get that little trade, when you're trading punches, getting there, you just feel amazing. Like you just come out of the gym, you just feel like everything that's going on in the world, you just forget when you're training and you're just in that zone and you just feel amazing. You feel free, just amazing.
Do you ever get used to it though? Do you ever get nervous now? Or do those nerves go the more you do it?
Yeah, the more you do it, the more experience you get, the less nerves. So, like, my last fight, there was no nerves at all. It was just more excitement. And I've never enjoyed a fight so much than the last one because all these years' experience just adding up. And I know how to deal with them emotions now because you get mixed emotions in a fight. But, yeah, at first, obviously, it's scary because you don't know what you're going in for. And there's so many nerves and emotions going on. You just, you know, it's hard to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. When did the BKB come around?
Probably about 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. Basically, I was fighting. I've had about 10 pro MMA fights, and my coach Danny, he was ex-UFC fighter, Danny Mitchell, and he's had a few illegal bare knuckle when he was a kid, and he was telling me some stories, and I thought, listen, I said to him, I want to fight bare knuckle just to try it, like even if it's illegal on the street or just get me a fight one day, and I want to see just to feel what it's like, you know, without gloves. And then BKB actually contacted Danny because they wanted him to fight on an ex-UFC fighter, but he had a few brain injuries. He got knocked off a bike and he had a bit of concussion, but he put my name forward. He's like, I know a guy that wants to do it, so what do you reckon? It was like, yeah, bring him down. We'll come watch a show at the London O2. And we'll get you on the next show and see how it is. And I went down to the O2 and watching it live, and that was it. I watched it live and I was like, I need to get in this. I'm booking in for a fight. So that was it. On the next show, Liverpool Eco Arena, I was there on the next show, and it was pretty crazy. That was it. I had that first fight, and just to see what it's like, and I just fell in love with it after that first one.
What's the hardest fights of boxing? You've obviously got thicker gloves, MMA, and then bare knuckle. What's the hardest fight in those three categories for you?
The hardest one, I'd say, is glove boxing.
Why is that?
It's hard to explain, but it feels, because obviously bare knuckle, you've got no gloves, so you feel free. It's more like realistic to a street fight. But same with MMA, it's like there's all different disciplines in combat. So if you're struggling stood up, you can just take them down on the ground. Or if you struggle on the ground, you could try and get back up again. But MMA is so hard. Obviously, like, you're getting controlled by a grappler, and you just feel suffocated. But when it's like boxing, it's just straight boxing with gloves. Again, you feel suffocated, because if you're against a good guy just tagging you, and you're cornered in the corner just getting tagged, there's nowhere to hide. You can't run anywhere. And it's, I don't know, I just feel you can't really get through with them boxing gloves, like bare knuckle. But I think, yeah, boxing is hard. I've sparred with some good pro boxers, and it is tough, very tough.
Yeah. How hard is it to go from boxing, MMA, to bare knuckle? Did you think doing all the rest of those things enhanced you for bare knuckle, or is it just totally different art, technique?
Yeah, it's kind of like a hybrid of both of them. It's kind of like both in one. It's obviously, it's boxing rules without gloves, but then it's like, it feels like your own MMA fight, because 4 ounce pro gloves is pretty much like without, yeah, it mm-hmm. feels the same. So that's why I think it won a big shot when I went to bare knuckle, because I'm used to that range with mm-hmm. small gloves on. So it wasn't really a massive shock. It felt comfortable, because I was used to MMA most of my life.
Yeah.
So it just felt like, yeah, I was just fighting MMA.
So you're a better, do you think you're a better bare knuckle fighter than MMA fighter?
I'd say so, yeah, definitely. I was always a good striker in MMA. Like, every loss was a submission. So I did work. I have got 3 twister submissions at pro MMA, which is pretty mad. I think that's like, no one's ever got 3. But you're only allowed to do that in pro, because it's like twisting the spine, so it's illegal in amateur. But yeah, it's I just find boxing at bare knuckle is my kind of thing. After that first fight, I thought, I found my sport. I found something that's my style. Do you know what I mean? For fighting. So yeah, I just feel so comfortable in there.
Mm-hmm. With the bare knuckle fighting, how hard is it to stick to tactics? Because when it's so brutal,
yeah,
and you're getting fucking
yeah
knockout punches but survive them, does the tactics go right out the window, or do you go in with a plan? Because when you watch the bare knuckle fights, the ones I've seen, it just looks like a free-for-all, just both fighters swinging. Yeah. Is there tactics involved compared to MMA and boxing?
Yeah, definitely. You've got to have a good solid game plan, because if you don't, then you've got to kind of be smart, where I like to use my range in and out, try and take less damage as possible, because if you're going in like a pro boxer, like gloves high, trying to swing, you're just going to punch elbows. You know, like if you're going to punch in the wrong places, that's it, you've broke your hand straight away. So you've got to like pick your shots and be smart. That's what I've tried to do. The first fight I had, I went in mad, and I think I broke my left knuckle. But that's the only time I've had a hand injury out of 6 fights, and I've kind of just adapted. As every fight went on, I've kind of learned, right, I need to do this, I need to do that, and I've adapted. And that last fight, I finally found, you know, the perfect style against, because Jimmy Sweeney, he was the best in the sport, and you know, just all of his wins, 25 wins, I think, 1 loss, you know, he's got the perfect style for it. So I was kind of like watching how he does it, and then kind of replicating it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's definitely a mad style.
What sort of injuries have you had? From what sport have you had the most injuries? Boxing, MMA, or bare knuckle?
MMA, yeah, 100% MMA.
See, people would think probably bare knuckle.
Yeah, MMA. I've had both knees popped out twice. I've had, when I was sparring, I had 2 hematomas in the nose, 2 blood clots. I nearly died from that, actually. I nearly got a brain infection from that, because, you know, the blood nearly travelled to the brain. But I had to have surgery on my nose. I've had, yeah, my thumb broke, MMA gloves. I've had a few bad injuries. Obviously, you get cauliflower ear, but bare knuckle, I've had a few cuts, but nothing crazy. I had one little injury on my left knuckle in the first fight, but other than that, no injuries at all. I actually had my last MMA fight was in December 2018. And obviously, I had a prize fighter tournament 2019 in January. So it was a month apart, and I thought, right, I'll get this MMA fight, trying to get no injuries. But I actually broke my hand in the MMA fight. I got really bad ligament damage. And obviously, I was entered this prize fighter tournament, and the winner get to fight Jimmy Sweeney. And I broke my hand, and I said to Danny, this is my tournament. I said, this is made for me. It was a sign that I'm going to fight Jimmy, because I've wanted to fight Jimmy as soon as I entered the sport. And obviously, I broke my hand, so I had to go to the specialist and get some injections. I had an MRI scan. He said, yeah, it's knackered. It's going to take about 6 months. So I basically had the whole prize fighter tournament with one hand. I couldn't even spar or use my right hand for the whole tournament, which was pretty mad. Not many people knew that either. Only like people I train with and stuff. So that was pretty a mad one as well.
So but you get when you've done the prize fighter, how many fights? Three? Four?
Yeah, so
you knocked a couple out. Your first couple of guys you knocked out straight away first round.
Yeah, the quarter final, it was an 8-man tournament. Quarter final, semi final, and the final. Mm-hmm. So the first two went to plan, and lucky I just got them cleaned out straight away. And then the final was a tough 7-rounder.
He was a tough bastard, him.
He was.
Who is that guy?
James Connolly from Birmingham.
He looked massive as well, man. Was that a full 7 rounds?
It was a full 7 rounds.
Yeah.
I had bad concussion after that fight, I tell you, because we had a bit of a game plan, but because it was the 3 fight cams back to back, no rest. And I knocked the guy out in the semi-final, and because I knocked him out so quick, in about 40 seconds, I had about 2 days off, and I went back to the gym, and I kind of peaked too early in the camp because I didn't have no rest, and I thought, oh, I'm just going to get straight back on it. And I kind of overtrained a little bit. So it did wear you out, 3 camps straight in a row. But obviously it was a big build up for the final, a load of pressure, and and in the end, we just both got in there and just swung down. The game plans went out the window, and it was just a bit of a slugfest, really. There was not much technique. It was just swinging.
And what did you win for that 10 grand?
It was 10,000, yeah.
10, it doesn't 000. Seem fuck all to nah. what you really go through. And
nah,
the blood on the face, blood everywhere, kind of concussions, nearly dying, brain injuries.
Yeah.
You think people love combat sports? Why do you not think people aren't taking it to bare knuckle fighting as fast? Or do you think it is becoming popular?
Yeah, it's definitely becoming more popular now. So I didn't really know of it about 5 years ago. I didn't really hear of any shows, you know what I mean? So, but now it's coming so popular. There's quite a few lower shows and that going on, but mine's the biggest show in like Europe or whatever. You know, it's massive. And it's slowly getting bigger and bigger, like a big platform now. But it's more for them people that have, you know, had a fight career and they want to maybe finish off with a bit of bare knuckle, because you wouldn't suggest to someone do bare knuckle straight away in their first fight career, because something you need a bit of experience for. Mm-hmm. You know, unless you've had, like Kimbo Slice, had loads of street fights. But yeah, it's something, I don't know, it's a strange one, really. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's. I kind of went in it halfway through my career, but I feel like I'm in my prime now. So yeah, we'll see.
What age do people usually fight bare knuckle till, in their late 30s, 40s?
Yeah, I'd say like late 20s, early 30s. Early 40s, yeah.
What age are you now, 30?
I'm 28.
Fuck's sake, so still young, mate.
Still young. Still got plenty, yeah.
You still hit your prime in your 30s and your 40s. You get bigger, stronger, fat. I don't know I think the last thing to go is power. So see, when you fought, is it Connolly and the Eliminator? The punches that you were giving him would have knocked out anybody else?
Yeah, I think, it was a strange fight. It was an awkward fighter. I'd prefer to fight a proper boxer in bare knuckle than fight like someone like James, because he had an awkward style. Kept bending down a lot, which was frustrating. I couldn't really get my shots going. But I think he kind of knew I was going for that same left up knockout what I did in the semi-final. But yeah, it was very tough fight. And like I say, when the game plan goes out the window, you're both swinging. It's anyone's fight, really. But he just took every shot on the chin, and he just won't go down.
Tough crazy. Bastard, isn't
it? I can remember one shot in the fourth round or fifth. He gave me, and it, I got a quick buzz in my head. It like flashed white. I was like, shit, that hit hard. And I had to like reset and go again. But luckily, I was fit and my recovery was good.
Yeah. So when you're doing the... What's the rules, first of all, for people who don't know? Bare knuckle, it's 7 rounders, 2 minute rounds.
Yeah.
What else? What's the other rules?
So it starts off, my first fight was 3-2s, nice and easy, but it's like a fast pace. Obviously, a minute rest in between. Everything's the same rules as boxing, except you get a 20-second count if you get knocked down, and it's 2 minute rounds. So that's the only difference, really. It's pretty much the same as boxing.
Do you feel that a big help, the extra 10 seconds
yeah,
if you get knocked down?
Yeah, because 10 seconds is obviously, it just goes quick like that, but 20 seconds, you get a bit of an extra breather, which is, it's good just to reset. So definitely helps.
And it's just wraps around the knuckles. Does everybody have to wear those bandages?
Yeah, so the first few shows it was round the knuckles, but now it just comes up halfway up your hand, so the knuckles are showing now. Mm-hmm. So it's just around the wrist. Because obviously when you're punching, if your wrist starts to bend a little bit, it's just a bit of support keeping it straight. Otherwise, you're gonna break your wrist easy.
Is it better with something round your knuckles or clean?
Because I've
heard somebody saying that when there's nothing on the knuckles, you can.
It's not as sore. Obviously, you get a bit of padding on there, but I prefer it without. Just like it without any padding on the knuckles.
Why is that?
I don't know. It just feels like you're just free.
Because I've spoke to many. Like I've had Richie Horsley on, who was a street fighter back in the day, great guy. I've had James Quinn on, the Gypsy King, who was undefeated in their own styles. Who was it? I can't remember who it was. I had this. But it says it's like a bit of self-harming as well. Give me the pain. They like the pain, getting punched when they get excited. That is kind of fucked up. Get that where you feel you want to feel the pain?
I kind of like, before the fight, I'm like, I want to see blood. I can remember punching Jimmy in the second round and his face just burst open. My hands felt like they dipped in oil. It was just blood everywhere and it was like so greasy. And it was, when you see that blood, it just spurs you on more, and it kind of got me more aggressive. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, this is great.
What does your missus say to you at all? Does she come to your fights?
Yeah, she comes to the fight. Oh, yeah, she's really good support. She supports me all the way. So massive fair play. But she prefers watching me doing bare knuckle than MMA because she don't know what's going on the ground. Do you know when it's on the ground and, you know, all my losses have been submissions in MMA, but... She don't really know what's going on the ground grappling, so she gets a bit confused, like, oh, what's going on here? But when it's boxing, she knows what's happening. Mm-hmm. But then she just when she sees a bit of blood or if I get knocked down, you know, she'll be panicking a bit, but she just gets pissed.
How was that when you got the Jimmy Sweeney fight, who's you say is the face of bare knuckle boxing?
Yeah.
I think he's only lost one or two fights, freeweight world champion. You were the underdog.
Yeah.
Young kid coming into a fight. You won the eliminator. Not really well known then.
Yeah.
How much pressure was on you for that world title fight?
To be honest, I didn't feel any pressure. Nah. It was mad. I felt more pressure for the prize fighter final than I did for the Jimmy fight because obviously I was just an up and comer challenging Jimmy for his belt. I felt he had all the pressure on him and I was just happy to fight the guy. Like it was just an honour to fight Jimmy in the ring and share the ring with him because I've always looked up to him. And you know, since I started the sport, it was like Jimmy Sweeney this. He was the king of the sport. And, you know, just before I shouldn't have done it, but before the prize fight, when I was in the tournament, I kind of looked past everyone and I was just visualising Jimmy every day. Like, I'm going to win everyone, just going to beat everyone. And then every day I was just training for Jimmy. It was weird. And when it happened, it was like everything happened for a reason. And when I got through it, every day when I was visualising it, everything come true in the fight and it was crazy. But it was an honour to fight Jimmy and to share the ring with him. It was great.
Are you a fan of The Secret, the Law of Attraction?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Visualisation, manifestation.
Yeah, visualisation. It's like what McGregor says, you know, visualising it every day, the more you do it, the more it's going to come true. And like I say, when I was in the second round in that Jimmy fight, everything I visualised was happening. And it was like... I was kind of getting too confident. I was like, no, this is easy. This is like sparring. I started pulling some shapes, pissing about, messing about a little bit. Because in the fight camp was, there's a thing called defense labbing. You know, was doing a bit of training, taking the mick out of some shapes I was doing. And I started doing that in the third round, and that's when he knocked me down, basically. But yeah, messing about. You can't mess about in that game, because 1 second you switch off, that's it. You can just get knocked out.
Was that your first knockdown?
Yeah, first knockdown.
But you looked shaking. Was that not? Did you knock down twice that round?
Yeah, knocked me down twice. I think he just wanted to get it over and done with, because I don't think it. I think I shocked him a little bit with the speed and the pressure. It got a lot too. And obviously, I cut his jaw down here as well. And the second round was amazing. It went. It couldn't have gone any better. But then, you know, when he knocked me down in the third twice, my recovery was good, and I got up straight away. But then Danny said, you know, just get down, take the count, have a breather, and then reset, go again. And then you could see Jimmy just trying to get it finished straight away. So, it was a bit of a shocker. It was kind of just a quick flash, and I kind of got back up, and I knew what was going on. My legs weren't really that wobbly. I felt all right, to be fair, even though it looked like I was a little bit. But I did feel all right. Everything just went too quick.
Is there much, usually in the boxing when they're tired, they get a rest, they'll grab on. Can you do that also in bare knuckle? Because the ref looks as if he splits it fast.
Yeah, he splits it fast. Because obviously it's a quick 2 minute round. As soon as that is a clinch, that's it, they break it straight away. So yeah, that's it. It's Baz the ref. I think you've seen him before, Big Baz.
Barrington?
Yeah. Barrington, he's the ref. He's the ref. He was the ref for the
last
fight.
He's a great guy. Shout out to Big Baz, man. Him and his missus Tracy, two great people. I'm always giving them shout outs in this podcast, but phenomenal. Was that who the ref was?
Yeah. So
I never even noticed.
Yeah, he was the ref.
Yeah.
Big Baz. So yeah, he was splitting it up, and
you wouldn't want to fucking go against Big Baz, man. He is massive, man.
I can remember when some lads are fighting once, and they kept grabbing hold of each other, and one of the lads tried to punch him while his hand was on the ground. So Baz grabbed him, that suplexed him over the ring, mate. It was mad. Yeah.
He's a machine.
He is, yeah.
And he fought for years with one eye.
I know, yeah, he did, yeah. It's crazy.
Nuts. So when you were going through that fight then, how hard was your camp? Did you train harder for that? Because I seen you were doing a lot of stuff with the breathing. We went in, what was that, the altitude?
Yeah, so I went to the altitude chamber for that camp. I did a little bit for the final as well, but it was mainly for the Jimmy fight. I was just trying a new few things. Went to the altitude chamber just to try and, see if it got me a bit more fitter. But I could finally spar properly for that. My hand kind of healed, even though it wasn't 100%. I could train. I had a full 10-week camp for that fight. So luckily no injuries either. Like first fight I had no injuries for. So everything went amazing, to be fair.
Yeah, the altitude. So when you're in the altitude chamber, it's half the air.
Yeah.
So it's shorter recovery.
Yeah.
But it's hard. The recovery's longer. Yeah. And it feels as if you're doing like two times the session that you're doing.
Oh,
so
it's
when
crazy.
You're going to bigger fights or fights, then your endurance is through the roof.
Yeah, it's good to sleep in them chambers as well. We was trying to get in there to sleep, but we couldn't in the end. We had an hour once a week just to see how it went, and you could feel it like halfway through the session. I think we was going a bit too hard in the training. You was only meant to go light, and I think we was doing like full-on sessions in there for an hour, nearly passing out.
Because you are known for your fitness, sir. People know you as being extreme.
Yeah, I was always pretty fit. I think it's just from being active all my life. Like I've had a good endurance all my life, but now it's a different level.
Yeah. You've always been close with your mum as well, who sadly passed away. Was it 2014?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
How was that for you? Because she was a massive supporter for you, always came to your fights. She didn't like your fights, of course, as any mother would, I'd imagine. But when she passed away, how difficult was that for you?
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely broke me. Like, you know, it took a massive chunk out of me, and it did take, well, it's still hard now. That's why I've got to keep busy. But it took a massive thing out of the way, and it was hard to deal with. I didn't know how to deal with it. It was, you know, me and my brother got through it together, but it was a very weird experience. Obviously, I didn't expect it was going to... I knew it was meant to have happened because she was ill for so many years, but in my head, I was visualising there, nothing's going to happen. And then, boom, when it happened, it just hit me like a ton of bricks, and yeah, it was hard, but I kind of just went back training straight away, just trying to keep me focused. But yeah, it took years and years to get over that.
Because that was a rare disease that she had when all the organs shut down.
Yeah.
See, that's difficult. I've mentioned it a few times on the podcast. My dad passed away with leukemia.
Did it, yeah.
And the body shuts down, the kind of everything. It's sad to see it. You clearly obviously just fought through your pain.
Yeah.
I still don't know if I'm ever over it. You don't know if you've ever got over it. How to get over grief or losing someone. It's fucking so hard.
Because
I think we just learn how to block it out.
Yeah.
But we don't feel it anymore. So when you're through that, how long was that? Did your mum get told, okay, you're going to die? Or was it?
So she was ill for about 5 years.
What was the disease?
It was called a Langerhans disease, LCH.
Very rare.
LHC, yeah, it's very rare. It's mainly like kids get it and stuff. So it was more in kids and men, more than women on their own. So it was like 1 in 1,000,000 or something. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, there was probably one guy in the UK that really knew about it. So never heard of it. I still never hear of it now. You know what I mean? So she had so many like problems going on for years and going back and forth to hospital. I can remember taking all the time. And then all these different problems were happening. They just didn't know what it was. They just kept going back and forth. And then eventually there was like, right, yeah, she's got cancer. So it was like, oh, you know, that's awful. Like, was trying to keep her strong, going through chemo for about a year. She lost her hair. She had a wig. I've got a picture on my phone when she come to watch me fight, going through chemo. That was the last fight she went to at local Doncaster Dome. And there's a picture, and it gets me all the time when I see it, because she's got a wig on next to my dad and she's just smiling away. And it's like, it's the most powerfulest picture ever, because you can see in her eyes she's got a few tears and she's not well at all. And she's like, it's just a powerful picture because she's got that much emotion, but she's like so proud of me, like what I'm doing. It's horrible.
Yeah. We'll put that picture at the start of this podcast. We'll dedicate this podcast to your mum.
Yeah, definitely.
So you send us a photo of him.
Yeah.
You can put that at the start of this podcast.
Great, yeah, definitely.
Did you feel, how difficult is it for a fighter to fight after a tragic loss?
Oh, it's horrendous.
Because people look at fighters and think tough bastards. They don't feel any emotion or pain. But every fighter I've ever interviewed, they've got more emotion than anybody. Yeah, so
definitely.
How difficult was that for you to push through it?
Very difficult. Like I said, I couldn't get my head around it for years. And, you know, I was literally taking fights on just a week notice, just because I was wanting to get something just to fight, let a bit of anger out. But then I'd go into the fight angry. But because I had a year before my mum passed away, I was going back and forth with colitis. I had a disease, so I was struggling with that as well. Like, obviously, I had anger, but then I was ill as well going into fights, and it was all pretty mad, really. But it's now I use it differently. I use it to fuel my training, fuel my fights, and now I look at it different than back then. But obviously, back then you didn't know how to deal with it. Who knows how to deal with a loss? No one.
Yeah.
You just got to kind of just do it as it comes. But yeah, it's been very tough, very tough.
Yeah, just in life, mate, you just kind of got to always kick on. It's like people always, like when it comes to Christmas season, birthdays, the day they die, there's always something there that triggers it, a smell and a song. There's always something there that triggers it. But for in life, I always say you just got to keep swimming against the tide.
Yeah.
We're all in the same sea. Some people have got more waves crashing off them than others, but you just got to keep fucking swimming.
Yeah, definitely.
So you've got, what was that disease there you mentioned?
Ulcerative colitis.
So what was this you'd been battling with for 8 years prior as well?
Yeah, so probably about about 10 years I probably had it. And then I was basically having symptoms like cramping all the time, rushing to the toilet 20 times a day, losing blood, fatigued. I was pale. I just didn't know what was going on for about a year. I kept going to the doctors and they kept saying it was IBS. And they just said, oh, change your diet. And it just didn't go away for about a year. And I was just getting to the point where it was just getting too bad. I mean, I can remember my mum was in hospital at the time and she was messaging me while she was on her deathbed saying, let me know how you get on. Like, she was struggling to message, but she kept ringing saying, oh, make sure you go to the doctor. So she was thinking of me while she was like dying, basically. That's what a woman she was. But yeah, I ended up going, my brother took me to A&E one day and was like, right, let's just go A&E because the doctors are not doing anything. They took some blood tests. I had some high inflammation and they said, yeah, you need to see a specialist. So I waited another 6 months. So it got really bad quite quick. And I seen a specialist. He had a camera, and the camera just showed ulcerative colitis, and it was horrendous. Like a normal colon looks like rigid, normal like colour, and this was like red raw. There was no ridges, and it was just, you know, when you get ulcers in your mouth, mm-hmm. it was like full of them inside the colon, and like when I looked at it, it was like, that's why I'm in pain, like, and losing blood, because it was horrendous. It was severe colitis I got diagnosed with, and obviously I knew how bad it was, because obviously I felt the pain, but I didn't take it as seriously as I should have. I didn't really like look it up, and I was just on so many like strong treatments all the time. Going through, I was on my first lot of treatment, some tablets. I had bad reaction a couple of months later, and they was treating me for a heart attack, so I got rushed in, and I had inflammation to the heart, because I was allergic to the treatment. So I've been pretty bad. I'm just, I've always been ill all my life. I've always had like illnesses. I just laugh it off now. But yeah, I've always been allergic to treatments all the time, and I never got on with any treatments. I was sat on like a chemo drip for twice. I was on it, and I was just having bad reactions to it. Basically, that's what it was, like treatments, biological treatments. Nothing was working really. And then luckily I went in for remission for about a year, and that was the prize fighting tournament year, 2019. The whole of that year I was in my remission, where it was under control basically. I moved to a different hospital. And then, yeah, I was in remission for about a year, and everything was under control. And then obviously last lockdown is when it just went bad again. So yeah, it's been a mad journey. All my fight career, I've fought with colitis, just dealt with it really, and it's been hard.
So how do you train through that then? Do you have down days? Do you lie about your house and not do anything for 2 days? You seem like the kind of guy who's always constantly pushing to get out to make something of their life.
Yeah, I am basically always fatigued and always like ill, like, because it's an autoimmune disease. It makes your whole immune system, it affects your immune system. And when you go on these biological treatments, they actually lower your immune system even more to battle the disease. So I was always just ill, basically always ill, pale, always had problems like rashes everywhere, just from the treatments and stuff. But I kind of just dealt with it. Like every day I knew I was going to have cramps, going to lose blood, rushing to the toilet. And I kind of just dealt with it, and just, I always just put it at the back of my mind and like, right, I'm training. I used to always struggle getting up for training and stuff like that, and work and stuff. And just constantly tired all the time. And, you know, because you go into the toilet that many times, it drains you, like physically drains you. And I don't know how I used to train and compete at the level I did, and going through colitis. Like when I look back now, it's like I was really ill, but you just get used to it and live with it. Like I just used to think that was normal.
Yeah, it's mad. I know my friend who, from Whites Beaconsfield, to do, we sponsored the show a few times. My good friend Ollie battles with Crohn's disease as well.
Yeah,
he's in the hospital all the time, and they just constantly working, pushing themselves to just got to keep being better. They've got a teeth whitening company. They've built it up from nothing to one of the biggest companies in Europe, which is phenomenal. But it's a mad disease. I think everybody struggles with it differently. So how would your training, do you think, be if you never had that? Do you think being fit has kept you alive basically as well, to help fight disease? It would make your immune system stronger, even though it gets weaker, but the white blood cells, I'd imagine, would be stronger to then fight these affections and disease. Like, how much has fitness helped you?
Yeah, massively, I think. Having a good, healthy, active lifestyle has definitely helped my colitis a little bit. But then I think when I used to overtrain a lot, it was a lot of inflammation inside the body, whereas colitis is inflammation in your colon. So the more inflammation I got, the worse it got. So, and also diet as well. Like when I used to cut weight for fights, I used to do extreme weight cutting, like cut 10 kilo to fight, and then you'd like go crazy and eat loads of food, and that used to mess my stomach up bad. Like salads and fruit used to mess your stomach up as well. Like you couldn't really eat salads, they used to mess it up. So you couldn't really eat anything. It was hard. Like I didn't really know back then. I was just eating what I wanted, and I think I didn't really, I should have like researched it more and took it more serious. But when you're young and you just want to, you know what I mean, just fight and go crazy. But
do you think that's a fighter's mentality? Fuck it.
It
I'll
is,
be fine.
Definitely, yeah, yeah.
Fighters, I'll beat anything.
Yeah, fighter's mentality is, nearly gets me killed. It's crazy. It is mad.
What about going plant-based or that? You see a lot of people going plant-based and it kind of reverses things and changes things.
Yeah.
I've tried vegan, I've tried vegetarian, back eating meat again, but it's just different. Yeah. These different techniques. People just don't know that I'm for everything, whatever your diet is. Do you know what? If it suits you and you're healthy, then by all means do it. Like I know people, my granddad lived to fucking 83 and he was smoking hash and he was eating pizzas and kebabs and he lived an okay life. There's people out there dropping down dead and heart attacks, fit as fuck, 40, 30. It's you just don't know in life, but it's trying to be as happy as you can be. But for you to even train through all that pain, it just shows you what kind of character you are.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal. So when you won the world title against Jimmy, how was that feeling for you going through those? What did he get? Did the corner pull him out in the sixth round?
No, it was the doctor.
The doctor.
Yeah, the cut was too big. It was squirting everywhere. Do you know what I mean? It was a deep cut, and
that must have been hard for him though.
Yeah, you could see it obviously in the video how frustrated he was. He didn't want to. No one wants to like stop because you know no one likes losing. But when you get a cut like that, it can get dangerous, can't it? So you know, it comes first. Health comes first. You know, you don't want to die in the bloody ring, do you? So.
And how was that feeling, training hard for all those years to winning the world title at bare knuckle boxing? What was that feeling and emotion like for you?
Oh, it was unbelievable. I'll never forget that moment. Do you know when they called the fight off? It was just crazy. It was like everything I've worked for has come true and everything I've visualised has come true and it's happened. Like, I knew it was going to happen in my head. There was not, like when I went into that fight, all I was thinking about was, there's no chance I'm losing this fight. So it was kind of more of a mental battle than anything, but it was the best feeling ever. Honestly, it was crazy.
Did your mum come into your head at that point?
100%, yeah. Before every fight, I've got some ashes next to my bed. I'll do a little prayer or whatever. I'll go and see her in the cemetery. And I always think about her before my fight, but I try not. I made a mistake one fight. It was in the prize fighter tournament, the final. I put one of her funeral songs on. Just I don't know why I put it on, but it messed me up a little bit. Just before I walked out to the fight, my brother looked at me. And he said after the fight, it was like, that messed you up, didn't it? I was like, yeah, I shouldn't have done it. And I thought it was going to get me going a little bit, but it didn't. It made me worse. Yeah, but
make you slow down a bit.
But luckily, I just kind of zoned out and went on it again. But for the Jimmy fight, it just fueled me more than anything. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm going to win this for you. And when I won, I thought of my mum straight away. As soon as I won, my brother got me on his shoulders. And I just looked up and I was like, that is for you. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was amazing. I knew she was with me then, 100%.
Phenomenal, congratulations, brother. And this was in 2019.
Yeah.
But straight after this fight, you nearly died because the disease you had ended up at its all-time high. Was it the worst it'd ever been? Now you've got a colostomy bag?
A colostomy bag, yeah.
So now, at the side, you've got the bag where the toilet comes out?
Yeah, it's just underneath the belly button. It's where it's called a stoma. The small intestine's attached outside the stomach and the toilet just goes straight into the bag, and that's about it, really. They remove the whole large bowel, so I've got no large bowel. I can't fart anymore. Can't go to the toilet anymore. Yeah. It's pretty mad, but I've got used to it quite quick. Yeah.
Think of the money you'll save in toilet paper.
Yeah, exactly.
So when you fart in that, does the bag ever move, or does it no? Is the bag going down? How does it work?
Yeah, sometimes like. Only at night time it kind of blows up with a bit, because when you lay on your back inside, it kind of like your bowels move, don't they? And they're quite active. So it does let like a bit of wind out your stomach sometimes. It frightens me.
And how was that then for a man to be going through that? Is for the 8 years, the pain, everything you were going through, has it helped you get in the bag then? Is there 100%. No more pain as much?
Yeah, it's weird not having pain every day. Like, it's weird not having these cramps. I feel like I'm normal again. And it's like, you know, I'm not every day, I'm not fatigued and I'm not like ill and I'm not struggling every day now. I feel brand new. So I wish I got this like 5 years ago.
Could you have? Was it awful to you?
No, because it wasn't at that stage where it was Because they say surgery is last resort, and I was avoiding it for years. Mm-hmm. But they did say it 5 years ago that there was like, you know, if a couple of these more treatments don't work, you're going to have surgery. And I was just like, no, I'm not having that. 100% in my head, I was like, I'm not having surgery. I think because I had avoided it for that many years, it just kept getting worse.
Was it the bag it put you off?
Yeah, it was the bag. And obviously, my fighting career, I thought that was going to be it. It was over. And when they say I had to have it last lockdown, I didn't have a choice. You know, I thought that was it. My fighting career is over. My life's over. But obviously, it wasn't. It was just what goes through your head at the time. You kind of, because I don't. People don't really. There's not really much about it. There is, obviously, it's massive, but people are embarrassed and insecure about it. You know, having this ostomy bag, but I didn't really know many people with it. Luckily, one of my friends had one, and he opened up to me and come and talked to me about it, and he made me feel better just before I went for surgery. But other than that, I didn't really have much info on it. I didn't really know anything about it, and it was a scary time, you know what I mean?
You're only 26 at that time, 27?
Yeah, 20. Yeah,
2019 then?
Just turned 27, I think.
So how was that to accept that then, to get that done? Did you have a depression after that?
I was pretty bad for a couple of months because it started in June in the lockdown, because we was in the middle of lockdown. I was doing a lot of endurance work. I was basically just at home. We couldn't go anywhere. So I was just training like a madman. And every day I was just doing like long endurance. I did half an Ironman. I was doing 100K bike rides, and all that information built up. So I don't know whether it sped it up a little bit, but I'm glad it happened in lockdown because obviously nothing's happening. But it got to a stage where things started opening up with lockdown, and I couldn't go out the house. For about 2-3 months, I was stuck in the house, couldn't go anywhere. Me and my missus, we planned to go for a night away, just to get away, get out the house. And I ruined the day away because I was just rushing to the toilet. I was in agony. It must have been 50 times. And I got rushed the day after we had the night away. I got rushed into hospital again. I got admitted. I must have been in hospital 10 times for about 2 weeks at a time. So I spent 8 weeks in hospital, and they kept putting me on different treatments, and they kept saying you need surgery. And I said, no, I'm not having surgery. I kept avoiding it. And obviously it got to the stage where I had a camera up the back passage, and they said, it's either going to turn into cancer or it's going to rupture inside and you'll probably die. So I was like, just give me one more week. Like, I just want another week. And I was in a bad place, really bad place. You know, when you're drugged up in hospital as well, everything just rushes through your head and you get mixed thoughts. You know, you're thinking, my life's over, my career's over. I was even thinking, what if my missus finishes me? Like, that's a crazy idea because she never would. She's amazing, best support she ever had. But, you know, you get crazy thoughts because you're just spaced out on drugs and stuff. But I was doing loads of research on nutrition, and I come across a guy, Mark Heidman, I think he was called, in America, some expert. And I started researching. It was basically a pegan diet, I think. It was a meat and vegan diet, both in one. But it was like I started doing loads of research, and so I started going like, I got loads of food in. So I was out of hospital for a week, and I tried this diet, but I must have lost about 12 kg as well. I was so ill at the time. I've got a picture on my phone from when it was like 12 kg difference. It was crazy. But I tried this diet for a week and lost loads of weight. I was cooking every day, but I just got ill again, end of the week. And then I got rushed in again. And that was it. That was the last time I thought, yeah, this is it. I ain't got a choice now. Mm-hmm. And then I got rushed in it in the middle of the night. And it was like 3 a.m, drugged up. And all these surgeons rushing in, waking me up like, you know, you need surgery now. I'm like, this is like it was like off a movie. It was scary. Do you know what I mean? I was in a bad place, really. And no one could visit you because it was the middle of COVID. Mm-hmm. No one can come and visit me in hospital. My missus, she's there like worrying. My brother's there worrying. You know what I mean? It was bad time for everyone in my family. My missus, she thought I was going to die. Like, she actually told her mum, she's like, I think he's going to die. Like,
what?
That's how bad. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? She's trying to work as well full time, but she had to have like a week off and stuff because it was bad. And it was a horrendous time, but I had to accept I was going to have surgery, and that was it. It hit me like a ton of bricks. And I had to decide. It took me a week in hospital just to decide. You know what I mean? Like phone calls to my partner, to Danny Mitchell, my coach, my brother, John Watton, my other coach, and was just trying to get some positivity back and doing some research. Danny got back to me and said, look, there's a fighter who's got a bag, like a boxer. He come across this guy in America who he's seen. And that gave me a bit of hope. And I thought, do you know what? I ain't got a choice, but I can't just sit and cry about it. I've just got to get it done. And they wanted it done there and then, but I said, look, just give me 2 weeks. Let me go home on some strong steroid tablets and let me have 2 weeks to let it sink in. And then, they booked me in. Three weeks later, it was they booked me in for the surgery. And I was kind of in a good place when I went in because I accepted it by then.
And, how long was the operation?
It was 8 hours, 8 hour keel surgery. So it was a major surgery, and it was a long one. I've only had one little surgery on my nose before, and that was it. I've never had anything like that before, and it was like I was preparing for a fight going into that surgery. It was mad. It was pretty crazy.
What was that like the first time you woke up with the bag on? Was it weird, strange?
Yeah, I can remember waking up in intensive care and looking around. I was just spaced out on bloody morphine. There was on morphine and ketamine I was on.
It was the good stuff then.
I was tranquilized. So I was just like spaced out thinking, this is bad. And then I fell back to sleep, and then I woke up in my room. I was in a room on my own, woke up, and then this woman come in, this nurse, and I looked down at the bag in the first time, and it was just, I was like mortified. I was like, shit, this is crazy. But it was just because it was one of the medical bags. Straight away, it was see-through, so you could see everything in there, and you could see the stoma, and it was like all green acid coming out at first. And it was a massive shocker, but because I was in a bit of pain, and everything was just going like really fast. I was out in 4 days. 4 days, and I was out because I was just recovered quick, and I managed to change the bag. So I was out in 4 days, and it was just crazy, really. It was a mad experience.
But you're still here to tell the tales, you know what I mean? Exactly. That's all part of your journey. That's all part of the story. Yeah. This is what people buy into, the inspiration, the motivation, not to quit, to keep going. End of the day, it's a fucking bag. You've got to do the toilet somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
You just do it in a fucking bag. You know what I mean? How's other people treat you? Like other fighters and that? Is it okay when you've got it on? How do you fight? Do you put something around it, or does it freak other people out?
Yeah, the first time people's like properly looked is when I went swimming first time.
Like people are going to look. I would look. You don't want to look. But we're all nosy bastards. Do you know what I mean? I go to the swimming. There's a guy who swims with one leg and he takes.
Really?
And I always look and I think, stop fucking.
Yeah,
you feel
it's just
bad,
one of them things, isn't it?
You're just a nosy bastard.
Yeah. To be honest, I know people are going to look because it's natural. It's like, you know, it's not normal. Some old bloke said to me last weekend, he was like, is that a tracker? is that some sort of tracker for your lengths? And I was like, yeah, because I was using my Garmin watch. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, it tracks my lengths. He was like, what, that thing on your stomach? I was like, oh, no, that's a shit bag, mate. He was like, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I was like, no, you're all right. You know, because people's not used to seeing it. I've never seen anyone with it. And, you know, I get a few stares, but I don't mind showing it off. I don't mind. You know, I tell people about it, and I just like raising the awareness for it.
Yeah, you've just got to own it.
Yeah, definitely.
Fuck's sake, a bag in the stomach. It's fuck all. It's just, you just got to own it. So now then, going through all that, the emotion, the ups and the downs, the pushing through, thinking your girlfriend's going to leave you, think you're going to die, thinking your fight career's cut over. It's not just one thing. You're thinking a fighter's coming to end his career and he's thinking, okay, I'm going to retire. Yeah. You've got everything. How am I going to make an income? Am I going to lose my partner?
Yeah.
Am I going to live or die? There's so much. So you've got all that pressure.
That's what I mean.
So how have you managed to handle that? Especially in lockdown, has that helped though with nobody about and kind of?
Yeah, I think it's helped because obviously in my head I know nothing's going on, no fight shows, so I'm kind of
not missing out on anything.
I feel like I won't missing out on much. So it happened in a good time and I recovered really fast, and I think definitely I'm glad it happened during lockdown.
Yeah. So How did you handle it all then? Everything hitting you at once, did you start? How long did it take you to start back training also?
After the main surgery, after the first 8-hour surgery, I kept having loads of severe complications. Just because it's me, I've always got complications. But I started having bad blockages. And 2 weeks later, I was back in hospital. And I got rushed in by an ambulance. My missus thought I was dying again. I'm like, for fuck's sake. I was like, this is never ending. And it just seemed never ending. I was like, I was getting bad cramps again. And I thought, what's going on here? And then I got rushed in. I was in for a week, and they were sticking tubes down my stoma while I was awake, and it was horrendous. The pain was crazy. And I thought, you know, why am I going to have blockages all my life now? Is this going to be it? Like, just back and forth in hospital. And I was badly again. I thought that was it after the first, but then I was getting mentally bad again. I was struggling. And then a week later, I got rushed in again. I had to have emergency surgery because there was a stitch internally too tight, a little bit too tight, and it was causing some severe blockages. So I was getting blocked up, nothing was coming out, and I was getting severely sick. And they basically said, if it's not going to come out that way, it's going to come out this way, and I was going to be sick. Like, and there was going to be crap. Basically shitting out your mouth. And that was a mad thought. And so they had to do emergency surgery, but they had to stick tubes down my throat to get like acid out. Oh, it was horrendous. And that was the worst time, worse than the first surgery, because I had this emergency surgery. I rushed. It was like, right, can you have surgery tomorrow? And I was like, what? Why do I need surgery? I thought you unblocked it. It was like, yeah, there's a stitch too tight. We just need to refashion the stoma. So I was like, yeah, whatever, let's go. I didn't have time to think. It was the next day. I got into the theatre, and I had to have another epidural in my back. And it wouldn't go in. I was like, and it got it in, and it was killing. And then I thought, right, let's just put me to sleep and let's get going. And then he was like, oh no, because of COVID, you've got to stay awake. I'm like, I was like, what? I've got to stay awake during this surgery. You're going to be ramming into me. So that was like a mad, as soon as he said it, I had about 10 minutes to get prepared. I'm glad he told me then, because I would have probably jumped out. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about fucking it off. I was like, I'm not staying awake during this. I've been through enough shit. But then,
literally.
And he put me sedated, so I was just like half drowsed, half knocked out. And they put a big sheet here, so I couldn't see, and people were talking to me. But yeah, I was awake for surgery for a few hours, but you could feel them prodding and stuff. But when I come out, because I didn't have no food for about 5 days, my stomach was empty. I was on strong morphines. I was on oral morphines. And I was on tramadols, all sorts of tablets going through. Because it was a tablet form, it was affecting my stomach, and I had severe sickness for about 3 days. But then I couldn't be sick because my stomach was that tender from the surgeries. I was straining my stomach every time I was trying to like be sick. And I actually thought that Saturday, I thought I was dying again. I thought that was it. This is the worst I've ever felt in my life. I never forget that day, that full day of being sick, and it was just green acid coming out, and it was the worst feeling. I'd rather have cramps in my stomach than that. Mm. And they had to stick tubes down my throat again, and oh, it was horrendous. There's that many, I've got horrible pictures on my phone just for like, you know, keeping memories. Mm-hmm. But whenever I get a feeling of being sick again, it gives me flashbacks. But that was the worst day. But after that, touch wood, everything got back to normal. Mm-hmm. And I've never had a problem since, never had a blockage, never had any pains. I've got on really well with the bags. But yeah, I think the main thing that got me through it was just surrounding myself with good people, good positive people. I've got John Wottam. He's like a mind coach. He does triathlons, Ironmans. Really positive guy. So he gets me in a good place. Danny Mitchell's really positive. He's my coach, my brother, my partner. You know, they're just all feeding me positives. So, you know, just trying to think positive as well, like thinking, what would my mum do? What would she be saying right now? And you know what I mean? Just trying to get through. But in my head, I was like, oh, I've lost my mum. This has happened now. I was like, there's no hope. It's just going to keep getting worse all the time. I'm not going to be able to fight again. So I was getting all these thoughts going through my mind. And I'll be honest, I didn't want to be here. After the surgery, I was having thoughts because my missus were back to work and I was stuck in the house 24/7. I couldn't even go out for a walk, couldn't go downstairs. I was laid in bed for about three weeks, I think. And you know, you get mad thoughts and you're like, I don't want a beer anymore.
Suicidal?
It was, yeah. I'll be honest with you. I was getting them thoughts, and my partner was really strong, you know. I struggled a bit, obviously, when my mum went before, but she's always been there, and my brother's always been there as well. But it was just hard because I was always on my own. But luckily, touch wood, I had my two dogs, and they kept me going through the whole of it. Honestly, they are the cure for a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Dogs are, honestly, they're amazing, and you know, that's that bit of company, and they're always there with you. But I think, yeah, after I get out walking about again, I think that was it. My mindset was focused on just getting things put in place, like triathlons and fighting again. Because one thing, like John Watton and Danny were saying, especially John, he was saying, look, what you got to do while you're laid in bed resting, like you're not be able to do it. Try not to think about your stomach and what's going on. Try and think about what you're going to do in the future, and think, like, set some targets, set some goals. So he actually, I went and seen him a month later, and he booked me in for a triathlon in September this year. And he was like, I'll book you in for this, give you something to motivate you for, something to work towards, keep your mind focused, even though you're not going to be training just yet. And all I was thinking about was Jimmy Sweeney again. I was like, right, I'm going to get back and I'm going to rematch Jimmy, like, next year. Even though there was, like, I wasn't even expecting to fight this year at all. I was thinking about a couple of years, but my recovery was that quick. I was training, I was back in the bag in about a month. A month after surgery, or 2 weeks, I think, after the second surgery, I was out in the garden knitting the bag, and I kept ripping the stitching out on this where the surgery was. So I didn't listen. I just used to rush back and overdo it again. But luckily, it settled down. I managed to get listen to me family, and they're like, look, just let it heal first, and then you can train. So I slowed it down, started doing a bit of biking, a bit of running slowly, and I built it up. I built it up from the beginning again, basically. Mm-hmm. And after about 2 months, the muscle memory started kicking in and my fitness started coming back slowly. And that was it. There was no more pains.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
I feel like a new man.
It was like, yeah, it was like I was Terminator's come back.
Mm-hmm. How was it then? What weight were you starting to train again when you lost everything? Did you lose over 28 pounds, 30 pounds?
Yeah, so I normally sit around 80 kg. Mm-hmm. And I can remember I got to about 69 before the surgery, and I tried to bulk up a little bit again, and then it was hard. I was trying to eat loads of carbs. But then after the surgery, I was down to about 72, and I started eating more. Obviously, you couldn't really eat. You had to eat certain things for like 2 months.
Can you still eat the same with the operation and stuff? Can you still eat normal?
Yeah, I can still eat. I can eat anything I want now, basically. Mm-hmm. I can eat more. I can eat stuff that I wasn't eating when I had colitis. Normal.
How did that affect your fitness? Like, can you still run as far? Can you still go as many rounds? Can you still push yourself to the extreme with the bag?
With the bag,
Does that affect anything? Liver, no. Kidneys, breathing?
No, so I honestly thought, you know, I won't be able to do like I did, but I'm doing everything I was before, but doing it better. Mm-hmm. Like, do you know, when I had colitis, I couldn't go any further than 5K run. When I was having a bad flare-up, only when I was in remission I could do like long endurance. But throughout the whole fight camps, it was probably 5K, and then my stomach would cramp. Mm-hmm. So I'd have to run back home. Like, I couldn't go far, you know what I mean? So it's always been a struggle, but now I can do anything without worrying. Mm-hmm. There's no worries.
Yeah. So how do you fight then? How do you get into a bare knuckle fight? Obviously, you can't go down a certain level in the waist, but yeah. What happens if somebody punches it? Or kicks it in an MMA fight?
Yeah.
Can it rupture or anything? Can it break?
Yeah, one main thing is getting hernias around the stoma, because it's obviously when they're stuck into it, ripped open your muscle into your abs, it's weak. And they say hernia is one of the most things. So I've got a few support belts and stuff, but basically when I'm boxing, I've got the boxing guard actually comes above the stoma, and you can get some support belts as well, but I can like tap it myself and it doesn't hurt, but I've not actually took a full on punch to it yet. But I think with the boxing guard over the top and another support belt and stuff, I'm pretty confident. I've done some sparring. I've took a few steady shots on it, and I don't even, when I'm sparring, I don't even cross my mind it's there anymore. Every day, I forget it's there sometimes.
Yeah, it'll just become the norm. Just like brushing your teeth, it just becomes the norm. But for a fighter, especially getting with Jimmy, I'd imagine he would aim for that.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody's going to fuck about. It's a you're in that ruthless sport where it's kill or be killed. So people are going to go for your vulnerabilities. But no doubt, if your mindset, you're able to work around that.
Definitely.
So how are you feeling then when the rematch get called with Jimmy Sweeney, after going through all your pain, your fucking suicidal thoughts, you're thinking you're going to lose everything, thinking your life was over, to then getting a rematch, fighting fit again. How was that feeling for you?
Best feeling ever. When I confirmed that fight, it was like, it was the best feeling ever. Do you know, just to get back in that ring is going to be a massive achievement. Never mind when I win it, when I beat him again. It's just going to be a massive achievement just getting back in again. And for me, that's the main thing. Just getting in that ring and within a ostomy bag and what I've been through is going to be a great relief. And I'll just be so happy to get in. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it was a good feeling knowing I can compete again. Mm-hmm. It was that. I think that was one of the main things that helped me get through recovery was knowing I'll be able to box again. Just always having that on the back of my mind, like I will box again and I will prove everyone I will, you know, prove surgeons wrong and stuff like that. So
did they tell you not to fight?
So before surgery and stuff, I was asking them so many questions, like, you know, I want it as low as possible because I'm going to box again. They're looking at me going out like, they just like kept saying, all right. And I was like, you know, is there anyone ever boxed with this before? And I was like, they've not known anyone. Do you know what I mean? So it was kind of all, they just probably thought I was just mad and they probably thought
they were right though.
Yeah, true. I think just from my mindset, I was just like, I'm going to fight again and that's it, end of. And I will find a way to fight again. And the only one I might struggle with is mixed martial MMA again, because obviously there's kicks, there's grappling. I'll have to find a way to get a support guard just to cover it and what promotions will let me fight on there. Mm-hmm. But my coach, Danny Mitchell, is keen. He's pretty positive he'll get me on an MMA fight as well.
Yeah. Anything can be done, man. Anything can be got.
100%.
This is all part of your journey, the inspiration to help people, the motivation to never quit. And that's what it's all about. Never give up. Never let what doctors fucking say consume you and think, okay, I'm just going to take their advice. Yes, take your advice from some things, but it's still your life to live it. Do you want to lie in your house in your bed all day just feeling sorry for yourself, crying into your fucking pillow thinking that's it? Because that ain't living. You know that yourself. Exactly. I've had many inspirational people on here, but your story's, I actually love your story. You're a fucking right good guy, man. Like, for what you're coming through and what you're pushing towards, and you're still young. To have that mindset at a young age, were you doing any reading or any listening to any motivational videos? Were you?
Yeah, I was watching your podcast. Yeah. I was watching a lot of Gordon Ramsay as well. Mm. Weirdly, just watching a lot of food videos.
Get a thing for the Scottish people, mate.
I know. Yeah, and I was reading some books, podcasts, and David Goggins. I was just reading like loads of positivity stuff, and just getting them positive thoughts and you're hanging around with positive people just gets you through, and any negative thoughts and that just brings you down all the time. So yeah, it's one of the main things that gets you through, to be fair.
Yeah. So your fight, when is your fight?
It's 14th of August.
And is it the O2? Are we going to have a crowd in again then, London?
Yeah, there's full crowd again, they say. So
how many people's in there watching?
I think 2,500 to 3,000 in the London Indigo. So it's inside the O2. At the Indigo, it's a nice big theatre place. It's good.
How come? Yeah, is it sold out yet? Is the tickets went out?
Tickets, they should be out soon. There'll
be
a link.
Get a couple of tickets, man. I'll definitely be there to support you, mate.
Yeah, that'll be good.
So, how's the training going to be for this fight then?
To be fair, I'm fitter than I was already on the last fight. 100%. I can't believe the fitness is improved. So I think, just because I'm not fatigued and tired all the time. But I've basically started doing a lot of triathlon training. So I've got actually 3 triathlons coming up in the next month or so. So I'm looking forward to just competing in them as well, keeping me fit. But since I've been on a proper training plan, it's actually John's coach, Dean Kirkman. He does world championship level Ironman. So he's so clever. He knows what he's doing. So he's done me a pro triathlon plan. I've been on it for about 10 weeks and training smarter without, I've never really had a proper plan. I've always like overtrained because that's just that old school style where you just every session you go full on. But now I'm training smarter. I've got a set plan what I'm doing. So I'm getting them recovery days in properly, training every day. Do you know what I mean? No days off, but because of me training smarter, I'm getting so fitter quick. And I start me camping about 4 or 5 weeks. Mm-hmm. I'll have a solid 8-week camp, get some solid sparring in. So I'm just looking forward to starting to get in camp again. I'm excited.
Yeah. Something to look forward to.
Definitely, yeah.
So feeling fitter, feeling stronger. What weight is it? Super middleweight? Are you middleweight?
Yeah, so the bare knuckle, the weights are a little bit different. Mm-hmm. I think mine's like featherweight title, even though it's at 75 kg on the same day. It's same day weighing as well, so you've got to get down. There's no big weight cuts. Because obviously, dehydrate yourself for a bare knuckle fight is a bit dangerous. So try and get down. I think it's lightweight or featherweight. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's at... But when you hit the weights, people's targets are some people are a kilo over and under. How is that in the weight division? Is it not as close as it has to be?
So obviously, if you're a few pounds over, you've got to try and cut the weight. Yeah. So saunas or anything like that, just trying to burn the weight off, but you've got to be pretty much bang on weight.
Yeah, so do you think obviously you win this fight then? Get into it.
100%, he's getting stopped within 5 rounds.
Have you spoke to him yet?
I've spoke to him after surgery. He's always been quite respectful and he messaged me saying sorry to hear about, you know, going through surgery and stuff like that. And we've messaged each other now and again, just being respectful. We've got that respect for each other like fighters, but end of the day, this is a fight and he's in my way of my dream. So
you still got the belt?
Yeah, I've still got the belt, it's in me room where
just in case you weren't active, they maybe took it off.
I'm still the champ, so I'll be defending the belt August
and he'll be buzzing for it as well.
Yeah.
So he will.
Yeah, so he's only had one loss against Julian Lane's ex-UFC fight, and he revenged the loss. So he's never lost twice to the same person. But
is he a gypsy? Big gypsy?
Yeah, he's an Irish gypsy, Jimmy, yeah.
Tough bastards, those gypsies, man.
It's in the blood, isn't it?
Yeah, they love fighting.
Irish travellers, it's in the blood, you know, bare-knuckle boxing. It's in the bloodline, and they've done it for decades.
Yeah. You've got two dogs, two rescue dogs.
Yes, I am.
Your pride and joy. How is that being father to two dogs?
Oh, it's amazing, mate. Better than kids.
Because I know you've spoken about having a third dog, fourth dog. You want a house with 10 dogs, you've said.
Yeah. Dogs are the best.
Why do you love the dogs so much? And why rescue dogs? Which is a phenomenal thing. I respect that as well.
I've always wanted a dog since when I was young, but my dad never let me have one. I don't know what... It's just never really had a dog, but I've always wanted a dog. And then when me and my partner, we bought a house, I was like, yeah, I want a dog. We need a dog just to... And obviously when my mum passed away, it was kind of like a, what do you call it, a grieving kind of thing. Someone was like, you know, maybe get a dog. And it was the best thing I did for grieving was to get a dog. And I actually called him after me, Bon Bon. It was after the sweet fight, Bon Bon. I used to eat a lot of bonbons back in the day, so that's why they call me it. But when I got my first dog, that was it just I fell in love with him straight away, and it was man's best friend, aren't they? You know what I mean? That connection you have with a dog and the bonding you have is unreal. The loyalty every time you come in, dogs are amazing. I'm obsessed, and I just love taking them out in the wildlife, and you know what I mean, just catching a few rabbits, but. Yeah, I think the one rescuing dogs as well, I get a buzz out of rescuing because you see them in that kennel, you see the little face and they're being abused. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think my first one, Bon, was abused quite bad because he was like really scared. He was underweight. He always used to be scared when you go to tap him and stroke him. So just now he's got the life of luxury. The amount he's come out is unreal. Like he used to be so scared all the time, but now he's like the man now, do you know what I mean? So, I rescued my other one about 2 years ago. She was a working dog, so she's a killer, insider. But she's like the most lovingest dog ever, you know what I mean? So everywhere I go, she just follows me. And it's a nice feeling, do you know what I mean, when two dogs...
Yeah, dogs are next level.
I'd have about 20.
Yeah, it's the loyalty and it's the companionship. Like, they don't speak back, there's no negativity. As soon as dog sees you, they're just happy, but... Yeah. That's what I'm hoping. Get the bigger house and then get 2 or 3 dogs. It's
definitely.
It's fucking hard work though.
It is,
but
yeah.
It's worth it because of what they give back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? 100%. The happiness, and that's what's probably kept you alive as well. Even we've got the missus and the brother and the fighting. It's you kind of want to, like, this they do say that like, people with in their 50s and 60s, when if they've got a dog, they live longer.
Yeah.
Because
yeah, definitely, yeah.
They need to be there for their
I
dog.
I reckon it's good for your mental health as well, getting a dog. It's, you know, just keep you company, mm-hmm. and especially if you live on your own or like that. I recommend getting a dog, or if you've just, you know, if you've lost someone in your family close, or it's good for like that grieving. Yeah. You know, it keeps you busy, keeps you focused, and it's just someone there. Do you know what I mean? It's,
yeah.
And you know what I mean? I like dogs better than humans as well. So, you know what I mean? So they are amazing.
Going forward for the future, brother,
yep.
What's the plans?
I've got a triathlon next week, mm-hmm. and then the week after. That's just going to keep me busy and shape. And then obviously the Jimmy fight in August, get that dealt with. And yeah, just get back in the ring. That'll be amazing. And then just go from there, really. Mm-hmm. My plan is just to travel the world fighting, getting paid for fighting, traveling the world as well, and just keep raising the awareness for ostomy and helping people out. I've helped quite a lot of people out since coming out of it and posting it on my social media because I've got a bit of a platform to work from. Mm-hmm. Hundreds of people have been messaging me, so I've helped a lot of people out, which is a good feeling as well, because a lot of people do struggle with it.
People feel alone.
Yeah, embarrassed, alone, confused. So helping the people out with colitis, ileostomy. A lot of people are just getting ready for surgery and they're scared and they message me and I'm out to mat a lot going through the surgery. So that's pretty mad, seeing as I've only had it for about 6 months. It's pretty crazy. But yeah, just to keep fighting, have a nice family, and just live the dream and just enjoy life. Yeah. You know what I mean? Just travel the world. Just look each day, just enjoy it. I think that's the main thing, just be happy. You know what I mean? So it's not about having money all the time. I just think it's just whatever you do in life, you just got to enjoy it and just be happy and enjoy what you do every day. And I'm loving it. I'm loving life.
It's good. That's the main thing. What about trying to go to America? I know America's big for this kind of stuff, bare knuckle fighting. How do you get into America? Is that something on your hit list?
I'd love to fight some, even if they get some big names from American coming over here to fight as well. I'd love to go and fight in America. I'd love to go and I fought in Thailand before. I fought in Russia. I fought all over the world as well, but just to fight in America would be good. I've always wanted to fight in America and Japan or somewhere crazy like that. I'd love to. It's just a nice experience. Getting paid to get fighting abroad is.
Who's the big names in America at your weight class?
In bare knuckle, there's a guy, Artem Lobov, McGregor's mate, Irish guy. He's had a few big fights and he's got a massive platform. He's quite big in the game at the minute with Jason Knight. So there's a few Americans out there. I'd fight any of them.
All at once, fuck it.
I'd fight them next weekend if I wanted it. But there's some big names. They're all like ex-UFC fighters and stuff like that. So the big names. That's what I want next. I want big names coming in. Ex-UFC fighters, Bellator fighters, and we'll go from there. But
everything you've set your sights on, everything you visualise has came true. So this is just another step.
Yeah, 100%.
Win your next fight in August, and then whatever, maybe another fight at the end of the year, and then possibly America next year.
Yeah.
It will happen. You're clearly a guy who believes what he sets out to do. What about for anybody that's in the struggle, brother, for anybody that's maybe going through a big operation, not necessarily what you went through, but...
Yeah.
For a man of yourself who's been in the ring and fights bare knuckle, to then lie in his hospital bed scared, that shows that you are human. Everybody's
exactly.
human. Yeah. We all have those feelings and emotion. But for anybody that's maybe going for a big operation or struggling to maybe go and see a doctor about something, what advice would you give for them?
Yeah, obviously everyone goes through them hard times. Everyone has down days. But you just got to think, you know, there's always light at that end, the end of that tunnel, whatever you're going through. So it's just... Even though it's hard, you're going to have down days and down weeks, but it's going to get better. You know what I mean? So there's always a bit of hope and just keep setting them targets and goals all the time if you're feeling like shit. That's what I try and... I actually set up a WhatsApp group to help people with getting back to the gym, training, bit of mental health as well. And, you know, I always say on there, just set goals and targets all the time, even just daily goals, just to keep your mind busy. And if you've got nothing to work for, you're going to... people do struggle to find motivation and stuff. So I think that's what keeps me going, is setting targets, goals, like these small ones every day, and then obviously fights, triathlons, they're the bigger ones. But yeah, there's just keep going strong, because there's always hope. There's always hope there. And I always think this one thing that gets me through is someone's always got it worse than you. So I always think, you know, I've got my bowels removed, I've got a bag, but someone's got no arms, no legs, someone's going to die. You know what I mean? So
there's positives in every situation.
Exactly.
We'll give a shout out to big Georgia King as well. I know who I had him on. The big Daredevil, also extreme athlete. How do you know George?
Big George, we started following each other on Instagram, and I can remember him from years ago when he climbed the Shard, and I was like, who's this crazy man climbing up there with no ropes? And then he got arrested. That was just crazy, wasn't it? And then that's how he got big, and he's on Channel 4, he's on This Morning. But it's just that, you know, it's mindset again, isn't it? It's crazy.
Believe in yourself. Yeah. Listen, brother, it's been an inspiration to have you on today. I think it's phenomenal what you're achieving and what you're going to do for the future.
Definitely.
But for coming on today and telling your story, I very much appreciate it and looking forward to your next fight.
It's been a pleasure coming on, brother. Mate. Thank you.
God bless you.
Cheers.
You can also watch my podcast on my YouTube channel. The link is in the bio if you'd like to subscribe. You can follow me on my social media platforms to see who my next guest is. Follow me on Facebook at JamesEnglish11, Twitter, JamesEnglish0, Instagram, JamesEnglish2. You can also download these podcasts on iTunes or Spotify.